This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from AirVenture 2017 in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. You know, you've probably been reading about Uber with its new Elevate program, which is an attempt to do for transportation, call it air taxi, what Uber has done in revolutionizing ground transportation. Today I'm with Nikhil Goel and Wyatt Smith, both of Uber Elevate, and we're going to hear a little bit about how this plan is going to work and talk a little bit about the vehicles and the certification. Go ahead, Nikhil.
Hey, thanks for having me, and so great to be here at Oshkosh. Thanks for having us. So here to talk about Uber Elevate a little bit. You know, Uber didn't start with any grand ambitions. We started about 8 years ago with a black town car service. And over time, as we grew to offer more products, more affordable products, Uber Pool, which is a product that allows passengers who are going to similar destinations to share one car, as we grew to be more economical and grew to more cities, we discovered that Uber was actually about a lot more than just transportation, but actually making cities smarter and more efficient places to live. As we went about this journey, we've been thinking a lot about how to fly in and around cities. And flight is really the natural next step for us to, you know, just like skyscrapers have made more efficient use of landmass on cities by going to the air, Uber hopes to go to the air as well. So we sat down about a year ago, the advanced programs group that Wyatt and I both belong to, as well as our chief product officer, Jeff Holden, who leads our advanced programs group. We sat down about a year ago and said, why can't we fly in cities? You know, what is stopping us from operating long trips in the air? And as we sat down to look at this, we made a first principles case to what it would take to actually fly in cities. The first thing we looked at was helicopters, and we actually very quickly discovered that helicopters are definitively not the answer. Helicopters are noisy, as you hear above me. helicopters, due to the large blades and retreating blade stall problems, have to operate at a certain rotor speed and tip speed, such that the noise they generate is prohibitive. Is prohibitive from operating in cities, even at smaller scales. Second, they're not as safe as a redundant aircraft that has multiple rotors, given that it has one large rotor, as hundreds of single fault parts that if any one of them were to fail during flight, the mission were to fail. Second, they're inefficient. Their turbine fuel-burning engines, as opposed to electric motors, and they don't have fixed wings, so they don't get any of the efficiencies associated with either of those things. And then most importantly, all of the maintenance and inefficiencies of the aircraft ultimately trickle down to the cost, making the costs prohibitive for most of our riders today to actually be able to take a helicopter. And so this is when we met Mark Moore. Mark has been at NASA for 32 years, where he led the development of three flight demonstrators. And we met Mark, who taught us all about distributed electric propulsion technology, DEP for short. DEP allows you to operate vehicles with numerous small electric motors that operate at tip speeds that allow the vehicle to produce a significantly reduced noise signature that actually make it okay to operate these in and around cities. They're also very safe because there can be numerous rotors in these vehicles. There's a high level of redundancy as the vehicles operate. They have fixed wings and they operate off electric motors, so they're 10x more efficient than helicopters. And then most importantly, our modeling tells us that over time, we can get the cost of these vehicles down to below the price of car ownership. And so we published a white paper with all of these findings in October. In April, we held our first ever Elevate Summit in Dallas-Fort Worth, where we announced that Dallas and Dubai would be our first two partner cities for which we would operate these aircraft. And we also announced partnerships with five amazing vehicle developer partners: Ember Air, Bell Helicopter, Mooney, Pipistrel, and Aurora Flight Sciences. All five of these partners are aggressively developing eVTOL concepts and working hand-in-hand with Mark and his team to develop concepts that we can deploy on the Uber Elevate network.
Okay, let's interrupt you there for a moment. Let's describe what you see as the type of vehicle this will be, when its certification basis will be completed or at least planned, and when these things will begin to appear in commercially viable form.
Yeah. So these will be 4 to 5 passenger vehicles, including the pilot. They'll have a range of up to 60 miles or more. They'll have speeds between 150 and 200 miles per hour. They'll be fixed wing, vertical takeoff and landing, distributed electric propulsion vehicles, which will have fly-by-wire technology. They'll be piloted at first. Over time, they'll be autonomous. We expect that we'll have our first demonstrator flights by 2020 in Dallas.
When you say fixed wing, do you envision a tilt rotor?
Potentially. But, you know, we've seen concepts that encompass a tilt rotor and don't. And so we plan to be flying demonstrator vehicles in 2020, and that will be for the purposes of community acceptance, demonstrating that these vehicles are low-noise vehicles, that they're safe, and most importantly, they're convenient and they save people time. At that time, in parallel, we also are asking our manufacturers to develop a certification basis to certify vehicles. Now, some of these may be certified as Part 27 rotorcraft, but we're actually very, very optimistic that the Part 23 rewrite, which Gamma and Greg Bowles led last year, is going to actually be the enabler for this technology. We've worked very closely with Gamma, very closely with ASTM subcommittees, and the FAA to understand the implications of the Part 23 rewrite, and we're very confident that we're going to be able to work with our vehicle manufacturing partners such that they can certify the vehicle under Part 23.
So if we've got these vehicles out here, and you're saying it's a draft or a certification basis by 2020, but you're going to be flying demonstrations between now and then, or no?
So, of course, we'll be having test flights before then as these vehicles are developed. 2020 is when we imagine the first public demonstrator flights will be, and these will be experimental vehicles. These will be non-type certified experimental vehicles, and we're actually hearing exciting things from EASA, where they're considering allowing these vehicles to fly under Part 21 and actually produce revenue even as experimental non-type certified vehicles.
And where would this testing be done? In the U.S.?
Yeah, so we've announced Dallas-Fort Worth as our first partner state in the United States. Mm-hmm. And we are working very, very closely with the city of Dallas, city of Fort Worth. Mayor Rawlings and Mayor Price have been amazingly helpful to our journey. We're working with Ross Perot Jr., chairman of Hillwood Group, and Ross Perot and Uber are working closely to develop vertiport locations in and around the DFW metroplex.
So you brought up vertiports. Describe what a vertiport is, what it would look like, and how it works in this multi-nodal transportation system, and why it's going to do that.
Sure, yeah. So we're working to build this concept out with experts from industry and from the general aviation community, and we've had a lot of success talking with the folks at Hillwood as well about how this would integrate within the real estate development play. Our basic premise is there'd be a series of node-based routes inside each of the cities in which we operate. We would have a density of traffic to be able to meet customer demand as it related to seeking out these flights at steady state. Obviously, we think that the biggest challenge here is the supply constraint. And so we're working with partners across all different types of manufacturers to be able to grow supply. What it will look and feel like, it would be very customer experience driven, like our Uber commitment is to the customer experience in our core product. And so a core focus on safety, a core focus on security in the vertiport itself, and then being able to facilitate the rapid loading, unloading, and takeoff of these aircraft.
And we should mention here that these vehicles are envisioned to be pure electric, so they need rapid recharge, or they need replaceable batteries or something like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're working very closely with ChargePoint in San Jose, Pat Romano and their CEO. And what's amazing about their technology is that their tech can charge vehicles as little as 5 minutes after a 30-mile flight. That's incredible because that means vehicles can spend more time in the air and less time on the ground, meaning they'll generate more revenue that will outpace the asset cost.
And let me ask you about the cost structure of such a thing. Uber succeeds because, for one thing, it's demand-based costing, so it's sensitive to demand. And second, it succeeds because it has low internal costs. These aircraft would not have that, so they're going to be more expensive. So what kind of costs are we looking like we would have for the passenger? Any idea?
Yeah, you know, it's difficult to present per passenger costs. So we have a few principles here, working very closely with manufacturers to understand what the full economical picture will look like over time. And we project that at the outset in 2023 timeframe, a 50-mile trip could look somewhere between $120 and $150 bucks. But you know, punchline is they'll be relatively expensive at the outset. But over time, with autonomy, with scaled manufacturing, with efficiencies in operations, and as we scale out to more and more flights, we fully expect, you know, our modeling tells us that over time we'll be able to get the price per trip below the price of car ownership. And that's really powerful because you can fly to work cheaper than you can drive there.
Yeah, so if I'm an Uber driver, I own my $25,000 SUV or whatever, and I use that to generate revenue, who would own these aircraft?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different potential owners for the aircrafts. You know, one thing that surprised us is that as we talk to manufacturers are very excited about the prospect of transitioning from a model where... they sell vehicles in large batches to one where they actually own the vehicle on their balance sheet and generate recurring revenues over time as they deploy them on the Uber Elevate network. And that's a possibility. We've been working with Steven Udvar-Hazy and his team to understand how the commercial aircraft leasing space looks at this, and their response has been very optimistic. And just like commercial aviation works today, we anticipate there will be a plethora of third-party commercial leasing agencies who will want to own these aircraft and deploy them on our network for the revenue that they get. But Uber does not plan on actually purchasing large quantities of vehicles.
Any projection on what these vehicles would cost, range-wise?
It's a good question. I think the very, very initial vehicles will be very, very expensive in the multi-millions of dollars. You know, around the 2020, 2023 timeframe, probably around $1.2 to $1.5 million. And then over time, we believe that with scaled manufacturing again, and we're talking producing vehicles at scales that have not been produced since World War II, producing vehicles of that high quantity will allow the prices to exponentially lower over time.
And when do you see them becoming fully autonomous?
I don't have a good time estimate there. What I do know is that the vehicles will be inherently fly-by-wire because they'll be distributed electric propulsion. I know that we'll be working very, very closely with the Advanced Technology Group in Pittsburgh that has so much expertise building autonomous software for the ground. We'll work with world-class avionics companies who are here at EAA, Garmin, Avidyne, Autodyne, a number of others, to build first-rate avionics systems that work in tandem with our autonomy software. And so we're closely with the FAA to certify autonomous software as well. So there's a lot of moving parts. I think certification of the autonomy will actually take a lot longer than proving out the autonomous technology. But what we do know is that over time, the systems will become less and less piloted, controlled, and more autonomous.
Okay, well, thanks very much, guys. I think you've done a good job of describing it. And Oshkosh 2020, we'll expect to see some of these vehicle concepts here.
Great. They'll be there.
It's a big honor for us to be able to be here and be a part of this. Thank you all of the community for welcoming us.
Thanks a lot. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from AirVenture 2017. Thanks for listening.
This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.